Coming up next on Tech News Today, companies are responding to the leaked CIA documents. Also, AI is getting good at watching video and understanding it, too. China's ride-hailing service Didi opened a lab in Mountain View, California. How a quadriplegic veteran is able to continue playing video games and other things. And the Statue of Liberty makes a statement on the eve of the International Women's Day. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1720, recorded Wednesday, March 8th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT.
And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase.
Welcome to Tech News Today, the show where we tell you what you need to know about technology today. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell, and we have Raccoon, apologetic raccoon. Mm-hmm. We must first and foremost start the show with, is it Rocky Raccoon?
Freddy.
Sorry.
I know his name.
Now Freddy's going to attack me. Freddy came out swinging yesterday, and I think Freddy feels pretty bad about
it. Yeah, he attacked me in the face. If you missed it, then watch yesterday's episode, because we did not edit it out. You'll have to watch all the way till the almost end. No, it's fantastic.
Excellent. Well, I accept your apology, Freddy Raccoon, although I don't think it's mine to accept.
No, it's not.
Okay. And there's no exceptions now?
It's International Women's Day. I do not have to accept anyone's apology, especially raccoons.
Bang!
On day two of the WikiLeaks dump, Apple, Samsung, and others have come out to defend the security of their products. Apple says that most of the vulnerabilities profiled in the cache of documents have been fixed, and that Apple will continue to work rapidly to address any identified vulnerabilities in the future. So to continue to get your updates, people. In terms of the spying Samsung TV, the company says they are, quote, urgently looking into the matter.
Yeah, they are.
So Apple vulnerabilities were in iOS, they were in macOS, they were in airport routers, they were in other products. The other news came out that Sean Spicer did a press briefing. He says there's a major difference between the WikiLeaks Podesta emails and this email, this dump of CIA information. He didn't exactly specify why it was so different, but it's different. Mm-hmm. And they're going to go after whoever did it, because they will be held to the highest extent of the law. That's what Spicer said.
I think there was a lot you know, when I first started reading the stuff kind of pouring out yesterday, it was easy to see all of these things that were being written about, you know, all these vulnerabilities of all these different OSs, and jump right to the worst, which is that, oh my goodness, everybody in the entire US has been spied on, blah, 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 this is outrageous. But really what it kind of boils down to is, and what we're seeing here in many of these places, is that a lot of this stuff, at least based on what can be seen inside the documents that were leaked, is based on kind of outdated technology. I know in the case of Android, you know, a lot of what I've read seems to point to there being no real indication of this affecting versions of Android after 4.4. And that was a long time ago. We're at version 7 now. Now, update, you know, the platform updates is really slow on Android. So that's still not necessarily insignificant. In fact, that's still 33.4% of devices potentially. But it's a little different than saying, well, you know, everybody has a modern up-to-date phone. This affects everything within that category. I have to imagine it's kind of the same for iOS, but at least in the case of iOS, if Apple rolls out an update to address these things, if it hasn't already been updated, that's going to hit most of the people.
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
It is a good thing. Yeah, I think that we've been talking about a lot of this stuff before, you know, like Motherboard, Vice. There are a lot of really good, the register places that have been saying this for a long time. Like, hey, the CIA has the ability to do this and this, and we think they have the ability to do this. And so now it's just in print somewhere, been leaked. So I don't think that they're going after me or you in particular, but it is good to know that there's that they have this capability, and you know, you can clean up your Privacy Act a little bit. I could, I know.
I mean, they're the Central Intelligence Agency. Their whole existence is around gaining intelligence from things. Another, you know, big part of this, you know, in the case of Samsung, for example, that the TV hack, in order to exploit that or make that exploitable, from what I could understand, you actually need physical contact with the TV in the first place in order to kind of make that switch. It's not, you know, based on what I've seen and what I've read, it's not something that can just be done magically, you know, through thin air, you know, remotely necessarily. There needs to be some sort of hands-on with the device. I imagine it's the same with iOS devices and with Android and everything. So, yeah, the majority, it's easy to respond and to see these things and be like, wow, you know, everybody's being spied on, whatever the case may be. But it's probably that, I'm guessing, at least giving the benefit of the doubt, that a lot of these things were created for very specific reasons, and you know, the circumstances are just way different. Mm-hmm. It's hands on the device in order to make, you know, make that exploit vulnerable.
Yeah, I mean, I think from a personal level, it made me think, you know, I'm not a spy, I'm not a dissident, I'm not a whistleblower, right. But, you know, and I said that thing, like, I never want to be the person that says, like, I don't do anything wrong, oh, look at whatever you want, because I just know that that's speaking from a place of privilege in some ways, that I don't want to speak from. But from a personal level, you know, when I said that yesterday, Ian said, well, you know, I don't believe that because then there wouldn't be curtains. And I'm like, well, I don't really have curtains either. But then that's because, like, I don't have neighbors, but I,
right.
I do want curtains, you know, I do, if there were people out there, I would want the curtains,
sure,
you know, so
sure.
It's the same sort of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, moving into different territory, the cloud, Google's next cloud conference is underway in San Francisco, and the company made a number of cloud-centric announcements on stage, as one would expect from a cloud conference. One such announcement, though, involves the new Video Intelligence API that was shown off during the keynote to illustrate how far Google has come with its efforts in artificial intelligence. The API that was demonstrated showed off how AI could pick apart a video down to the identification of individual elements and even make determinations like, this is a commercial, based on what it's seen. Also, search capabilities similar to Google Photos, what you have right now with Google Photos, where you can go in and you can search, you know, not just for show me pictures of dogs, but show me, you know, pictures of a particular breed of a dog, and their image recognition is so strong that it can pull back those results from your photo library. They're now implementing this into video. As long as the video is stored with Google Cloud Storage, it can pick that stuff apart, which is really impressive.
I think that Google, this is where they really succeed, like using all their data, you know, just, again, from a personal level, they're able to find pictures of my dog when I want to, or pictures from, you know, with mountains in them or shoes or whatever it is that I'm looking for. So I really like that. I think reading about this cloud conference has been really interesting because they're the third. They're like an upstart in the cloud.
Right.
They're like third place to Amazon and Microsoft, which makes sense when you think about it. But it's interesting to think about Google as like an upstart. But they're really gaining ground in their cloud business. They've gotten, I guess, Verizon just moved from Microsoft over to Google. So they're really growing. And it's, I mean, this is where a lot of the money is really being made in cloud services. So they want to win this race.
Yeah. And especially, you know, giving developers access into that cloud. And obviously this API is a big part of that. Google, you know, outside of just the cloud and into artificial intelligence, a big part of what Google's trying to do right now is to really bring, kind of democratize their knowledge of artificial intelligence and bring people into it and allow that to spread out. Of course, it benefits Google because, you know, especially with something like this, you know, it's dependent on that video library existing on Google's cloud storage. So that's of benefit to Google to have it all within its walls. But I really like the approach of kind of sharing this information, opening it up, and then seeing what, you know, creative developers can come up with after having access to these tools. I think it's cool.
They also announced that they bought the data science community Kaggle, which I keep wanting to call Kaggle, but I'm
Don't
pretty sure it's Kaggle.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because Kaggles are something different. So they've used AI to grade high school essays, to diagnose heart failure. This is a company that's really been crowdsourcing AI and, you know, just trying to figure out all the jobs that AI can take from us. So I'm not exactly sure what Google's going to do with them, but yeah, hold on to your jobs, people. Recode reports that Didi Chuxing, China's ride-hailing Uber competitor, is opening a self-driving lab in Mountain View, California, to be led by Charlie Miller. That's the man who you might remember remotely hacked Jeep back in 2015. Miller came from none other than Uber, whence he jumped ship last week. Didi also poached a senior software engineer at Waymo, Zhaoyin. And the company has talked about using its treasure trove of data for autonomous research. So it was no secret that they were going to get into the driverless car race. But many were surprised that they were opening up shop in the U.S. They also announced a self-driving car tech contest as a partnership with Udacity.
Now, it does seem, from what I could gather anyways, that this doesn't necessarily mean they're bringing ride-hailing service to the U.S. They're just kind of opening up a shop here for development. I imagine there's great exposure to more talent that they could kind of tap into. They're also 10 miles away from Apple's two Cupertino campuses. And so, you know, that's great exposure. It's also being close to Apple, which, you know, is a huge investor in the company, $1 billion last year. But being close to Apple, which, as we've talked about in recent months, is really focused on potentially creating driving systems for partnerships as opposed to creating their own self-driving vehicles. So partnerships with companies like Didi. Mm-hmm. And this puts them very, very close to Apple at a very convenient time.
Yeah, I agree. From what I've read, I don't think they're going to be opening their ride hailing. I think that ride hailing itself is really in the future. If you're looking forward, autonomous car technology is a much bigger deal than ride hailing. But I think they'll go together, mm-hmm. obviously. And they're also unlikely to open their own thing because they have a partnership with Lyft already. So it sort of feels like if Uber's like the elementary school playground bully, like all of the little people are ganging up and saying, you know, becoming, partnering into, like all the little groups are partnering in to say, we got you. We got you in your weak spot, Uber.
Yeah, totally. All the little groups, which, by the way, Didi does 20 million rides per day in China.
Yeah.
So little with air quotes.
Yes, that's true.
But yeah. Absolutely. I think that's exactly what's going on right now. It's definitely a convenient time to be making these big switches because it's such a moment of weakness for Uber right now. Mm-hmm. So capitalize. Social Q&A app Jelly, which was created by Twitter co-founder Biz Stone as well as Ben Finkel, has been snapped up by Pinterest in a move that Pinterest says will help it build out its visual discovery engine. No mention of the future of Jelly, the app and service itself. I'm guessing it's pretty likely that the app's going to die off and that small staff that's kind of brought over is going to be brought more into the Pinterest fold to work on their products. Jelly I played around with Jelly multiple times because I always thought it was a really cool idea. It's more social Q&A. So it was like you'd take a picture of something or you'd ask a question and you put it out there. And instead of getting a search result back, you'd wait for other people in the community to answer the question for you. And maybe they'd be more equipped to answer that question because they're like a doctor and your question is medical related or whatever the case may be. I was always not at all very impressed with the results that I got and the speed at which you get it because we're just so used to fast things, you know, answers to our questions super fast. And Google already does a pretty great job of this anyways without the requiring, element of somebody on the other end.
Yeah, so humans are slow.
Yeah.
There's another
humans
job.
Are too slow.
We should keep track of all the jobs that are being stolen by robots per episode. Like
I think
a little.
That's depressing. I don't want to know.
But not if you think about it like I do, that we'll all just be free to sit on our blankets in the park and drink champagne.
That's a really nice future, actually. if all of that means that we can all like sit on the beach and go swimming and stuff, then okay. I'm a little bit more for it.
I for sure think that's what that means. So Jelly was sort of like, oh, look, I have this weird mole. I'm going to take a picture of it. And then you're going to look at it and you're like, oh, yeah, I have that same mole. Or I'm a doctor.
I know all about moles. moles. I'm a mole expert.
Right. Or you're like, I'm a doctor and I don't have anything better to do than search jelly for your mole and decide I'm going to diagnose it for free. Was it free?
Yeah.
It wasn't like, so.
No, yeah. It was free. It was free. I mean, it required, it relied on the idea that people would, you know, crowdsource their knowledge.
But it wasn't like AI. There wasn't an AI saying like that mole and looking at all pictures of the moles.
No, it's just other people.
So I can't really quite figure out. I mean, aside from the fact that it was started by Biz Stone, who started Twitter, that's a big deal. I can't figure it out. Maybe like they have some patents or something to like the idea of a human-powered search engine. I know Pinterest is doing that with images, like trying to, I don't know, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it really does seem more like, you know, potentially an acquihire for something. Maybe there is some part of that image search thing that they see some overlap with Jelly. And it also seems like, because Jelly, you know, launched in 2013, pivoted to a meme creation app called Super that really didn't go anywhere. And then they kind of went back to Jelly last year, repivoted, if you want to say that. And it just never really seemed to go anywhere. And I think they were at a point to where they were considering another round of funding. You know, what do we do next? And then this Pinterest kind of idea came along, and I just have a feeling, at least for, you know, the folks at Jelly, it was kind of like, all right, well, here's our chance to just kind of put this behind us and, you know, and move on.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you look at the reviews, I mean, like, just the tech press today, they call somebody, I think The Verge called it a truly terrible search engine, and I think that TechCrunch called them a flop. So, yeah, it's just one of those weird insider things. Also, can anyone take an app called Jelly seriously?
I don't know if anyone did take an app called Jelly seriously.
Just, the name itself.
Yeah, Scooter X, you point out, and I have this in my notes as well, so I appreciate you mentioning that. Biz Stone is continuing with Pinterest more in an advisory role to the co-founder and chief product officer, Evan Sharp. And then as well, Ben Finkel is going to join the product team for growth. So, I mean, it's not like here's our product, see you later. They're being integrated into the Pinterest staff, but on some level, it just really feels like an exit of some sort that, you know, won't be long before Biz Stone is like, all right, cool, I did my thing, see you guys later.
Well, good for you, Jelly. Yeah. We're all celebrating your success.
We're so jelly of Jelly right now.
Here's a tip for freeing up some space on your iPhone, especially if you're an avid Twitter user. Mike Murphy over at Quartz says that with today's Twitter update, you got to update your Twitter app on the iPhone. All you have to do is tap me. That's the little picture of the face in the bottom right-hand corner of the app. Then tap the gear icon, then tap settings, and then tap storage. Mike says this might say data usage and not storage, but it said storage on my Twitter app. Then tap clear them both to free up some space for more tweeting or more pictures or whatever you want to keep on your iPhone. So we had a little discussion back and forth about this, clearing up space. The iPhone is very weird like that. I know you can clear up space in Safari. Mm-hmm. You have to go into the Safari app to clear your cache and everything. But there aren't that many apps that let you do that. You certainly can't clear up the whole system cache.
Right, the cache for the app. And I mean, on Android, you can go into any app's settings page, and there's a storage section for all apps, for each app individually. You can go in there and you can delete the associated data. So if I was to do that, it would wipe anything that it had, you know, that it associated with the app that, you know, I might have to re-log into the service again the next time I use it. You can also delete the cache on a per app basis, so you can blow out any of that remaining stored, you know, sort of backlog to free up space. So when I read this, I was like, oh, you couldn't do this already? I've just taken that for granted, I guess, over the years.
Yeah, I don't know if it's one of the things about iOS, like more stuff is locked in, or it's harder to, I guess the app developer has to write it in.
Yeah, I mean, it could potentially also be, you know, depending on how the app is written, if you get rid of cache or you get rid of associated files and the developer is not actively decided what happens when you do that. Maybe there's dependencies on the files that are there that when you as a user blow it out and that hasn't been taken into consideration, it actually affects the operation of the app. Mm. Maybe that's why it's not as implemented on iOS. But I was surprised. Like, that's a really great way to kind of, you know, give you a chance to manage the storage that you have. Mm. If you think to do it. I mean, many people would never think to do that.
Right. You know? Maybe I will switch to Android after
this all. This could be the thing.
No.
No, this could be the actually, one thing that pulls you over. You're like, I've always wanted to get rid of my cash.
Yes. We all want to get rid of our cash. After the break, we will talk to Julie Cohen, director of the acclaimed documentary American Veteran, about some of the tech that the subject of her film used after being injured in Afghanistan. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, the sponsor of this episode. Getting a mortgage is tough. It's a lot of money to buy a house, or if you're trying to refinance, it's money that you can save, and it's difficult to figure out how you can save that money. So when it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone who you can trust and who has your best interests in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you'll get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. So you no longer have to waste time searching through stacks of paperwork. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial info to get a mortgage approval in minutes. You can even adjust the rate and the length of the loan, and you can do all that in real time to make sure you get the mortgage solution that's right for you. You don't want to get the mortgage solution that's right for anyone else. You want to get the solution that's right for you. So whether you're buying a new house or refinancing your existing mortgage, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support.
So Nick Mendez was 21 when his vehicle encountered an IED during his tour in Afghanistan as a sergeant back in 2009. That explosion ultimately left him paralyzed from the neck down. There's a new documentary out called American Veteran that follows Nick for the 5 years that follows that event. And joining us to talk a bit about her film is director Julie Cohen. Welcome to the show, Julie.
Hi there. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. We really appreciate you joining us today. So first, tell us a little bit about how you discovered Nick and what motivated you to help him tell his story.
Well, in fact, I actually came across Nick very much planning to do a technology story. There's a guy in Phoenix named Brad Soden. There's a company called Tank Chair that builds all kinds of very cool, different kinds of technologically advanced wheelchairs. The Tank Chair is a wheelchair on tank treads that's kind of an all-terrain vehicle. He also has something called the Mongo that goes super fast, like all this kind of jazzy technology that he's using for the disabled generally and disabled vets in particular. And so I was thinking I was going to kind of follow that company and some of the veterans that they were making tank chairs for. And pretty early on in the process, we met Sergeant Mendez, Nick Mendez, and his wife, well, his then girlfriend, Wendy, and they had kind of such an amazing story and so many things going on in their lives, including the love story, that I kind of decided just to focus on them and really make the story about them and their lives.
Yeah, it really seems, based on what I've seen. Now, I haven't seen the film itself, but I did a lot of reading, listened to some interviews, of course, with you, and found everything that I could find online to kind of look into it. Just really seems like Nick has incredible resolve and is very resourceful, obviously. I guess tell us a little bit about Nick's high-tech wheelchair, his setup that he uses.
Well, the wheelchair he uses for day-to-day use, I mean, the cool thing about it is that it's mouth-operated. He doesn't have the use of his arms and hands as well as his legs, so he needs a wheelchair that doesn't roll in the traditional way, and it's called Sip and Puff. Mm-hmm. Fairly common, actually, technology for quadriplegics. And basically, there's a little straw that's attached to the chair, and he sucks in it to move forward and blows to go backwards. I think I have that right. You can also, there's like a little touchpad screen on it that he uses to adjust how upright or how reclined he wants to be at any moment. In fact, actually, one of the first things I did when I met him and started filming was have him demonstrate for me how the thing works, because kind of everything technological in his life I found pretty interesting, just interesting to look at and interesting to remember, both the challenges you have to deal with going through life without the use of your arms or legs, but also kind of some of the abilities that people have come up with and the clever workarounds to make life work without traditional body movement.
Right.
So one of the characters, that you have a cast of characters in the documentary, one is John Shoemaker, who's Nick's friend. He's described as his go-to wheelchair repairman. So is there a lot of this that is that they're doing themselves, that, you know, they're MacGyvering, or does this technology something that like comes out of the box?
Absolutely. Yes, you use the word MacGyver. Actually, Nick tends to use the verb redneck for that kind of thing. But yes, kind of putting things together with whatever on hand is definitely part of Nick's whole spirit. His friend John Shoemaker, who was a Marine and also is a triple amputee himself, lost both his legs and part of one of his arms and a good deal of his hand. But is still a very handy guy, actually. And at one point when we were filming, the sip and puff straw on Nick's wheelchair broke. So rather than going to the VA and dealing with whatever bureaucracy that would entail and waiting in a line for hours, he just was going over to John's home anyway. And he just said to John, "Oh, you know, do you have like some WD-40 maybe and duct tape and something?" And the next thing you know, John and his wife Courtney were messing around with the straw and figured out, they actually took out a few of the links on the straw, and they just figured out a way with some pliers and some super glue to put it all back together. There's a lot that Nick and Wendy do that is very much jerry-rigged type stuff. When the first or second day I showed up and started filming with them, I was watching Nick play the first person shooter video games that he likes. He's really into the Fallout series. And I came into the bedroom and Wendy had sort of a breakfast in bed tray like in front of him. And he was both playing the video game with using a stylus in his mouth on a Sony PlayStation console that he was tipping back and forth. And next to him, they had a Tums bottle that they had masking taped an e-cigarette to so he could go back and forth and smoke his e-cig and play the Fallout series without having to call anyone in to bring him, you know, to give him a puff of cigarette. And he never had to really, you know, he was just always going back and forth between having the stylus in his mouth and smoking. And I was like, okay, this is, well, first of all, I mean, truthfully, I'm a filmmaker, so I was like, okay, this is a good scene.
Right. Write the note down.
But also, like, as a human being, I was like, okay, this is pretty cool. And it's really amazing that I was like, oh, how'd you figure out how to use the console like that? Right. And Nick was like, I just kind of figured it out. And I was like, and what about that Tums bottle? It's like, oh, Wendy was like, yeah, I figured it out. You know, I didn't like to have to keep running back into the room every time that he wanted to take a drag of the e-cig. So we figured out how to sort of attach it to a Tums bottle.
Man, that's so incredibly resourceful. And I have to imagine when you're, I mean, I cannot imagine being in that position, but I have to guess that when you're in that position, any amount of autonomy that you can gain, no matter how you get there, improves your life and improves your resolve and your outlook on things. I just don't understand how you play a modern video game with a single point of touch. You know, these controllers, they have buttons all over the place. I don't understand how you can pull that off.
You'd have to watch the scene, but also some games work and some games don't. Yeah. Call of Duty doesn't really work for him. It has to be sort of like a one player at a time type game to make it work. And he was a big fan of video games before going into the Army, and said that he at first was really frustrated, like, I'm not going to be able to play again. And then he found the Fallout series. Fallout New Vegas is what he was playing when I met up with him, and he realized that actually was going to work really well. So,
wow. And it's not just video games. Also, he has another rig to go enjoy things like fishing. How does that work out?
Yes. Well, you know, the amount of technology, kind of high tech, medium tech, and low tech that exists for quadriplegics is pretty impressive. And there are now both sip and puff fishing poles and even sip and puff gun mounts. Nick, for a fishing trip that he was doing with a group that took him out on a trip called the Foundation for Exceptional Warriors, helped arrange for him to get a sip and puff fishing reel, where basically works fairly similar to his chair. It's sort of like the fishing pole was on a stand, and there was a straw attached that he would use to suck in to move the reel in one direction and then blow to move it in the you know, to reel it back in.
That's really cool. What's something that you walked away from in this experience that you didn't know going in? I mean, this was a 5-year, at least, I'm imagining at the very minimum, it was 5 years of following Nick in his life. What did you learn in that time that you didn't actually know going into the experience?
Yeah. Well, we tell his story for 5 years, but I was working on it for about 2.5 years. We sort of met up with him partway through. You know, I would say the overall lesson to me was I went into this thinking about with the assumption that the most notable thing about being a quadriplegic veteran or maybe just a quadriplegic at all would be all the things you can't do. And what I learned from Nick and Wendy and John and the Foundation for Exceptional Warriors and all the people that they're kind of dealing with is like the multitude of things that you can do unexpectedly. And I'd add, you know, that like falling in love and even having sex fell into those categories of things that I thought you wouldn't do, but actually you can do. So, you know, if you wanted to take the most optimistic message, and I think there really is an optimistic message like that's a lesson. That's a lesson in their experience and just a life lesson maybe in life in general. Like maybe you can do more than you might expect. And that, you know, technology has its huge advantages and its horrors, as I'm sure you guys explore both all the time. But like, it's really amazing what technology can do, and especially kind of technology combined with motivation and cleverness of a couple like Nick and Wendy.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's the story. What caught me when I heard you talking about the film was the story of Wendy, his wife, who met him after his accident. And that's a big part of the film also, that their love story. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. You know, I love love stories. I kind of think every documentary, every film to some extent should be both a comedy and a love story. When you hear words like, you know, quadriplegic veteran blown up by an IED in Afghanistan, maybe you don't think about romance and comedy, but there are plenty of both in Nick's life. And basically the love story is that when he was in the VA hospital in Long Beach, and he was there for quite a period of time, about 6 months, he met a medical caregiver named Wendy, who was applying to be his home health nurse after he was released from the hospital. It turned out that the agency that she worked for their insurance didn't cover active duty military, which he still was at that point. So she couldn't be his nurse. And unbelievably, even though working with quadriplegics and paraplegics was what she was doing full time, she really had been, she'd really been kind of charmed by Nick when she met him in the hospital. And also her dad served in Vietnam, and she kind of had an affinity for military guys, and also just a recollection from her dad's bad experience of, you know, military guys being treated not so well when they came back home. Like, she wanted to show some care to someone, and like thought, this is a nice guy. So she basically, even though she wasn't going to be working with him professionally, she just called up his doctors and nurses and said, hey, would it be okay if I just stopped by to visit him? And she started visiting him in the hospital at first occasionally, and then really regularly. And they were just hanging out and watching movies and doing, you know, normal stuff you might do hanging out with someone, and started to really have feelings for each other when Nick was released from the hospital and went to live with his dad for a year or so. She kept coming over and kept visiting, and everyone was kind of, even Nick was like, what, you know, what's this about? What's her game here? What's she up to? And it just, they just ended up finding this real bond and shared sense of humor. Nick is a really, really fun guy. So she was just having fun hanging out with him. And ultimately, they fell in love and moved in together. And, you know, as part of the story that you'll see in the film, they actually got married and have been married for about a year and a half now, living, speaking of technology, in an incredibly cool very technologically advanced all access home that's been built for them by a group called Homes for Our Troops that makes fully accessible, kind of customized mortgage-free homes for Iraq and Afghanistan vets. They've made about 250 so far. Wow. So in the course of our filming, they were designing this house and having it constructed in a place called Murrieta, California, sort of, I don't know how, I think you guys are on the west. It's some kind of somewhere between LA and Palm Springs. Mm-hmm. All kinds of, there's the lift device that helps Nick get out of bed, helps Wendy help Nick get out of bed and can then like sort of move him around more than what he had in his previous home, and just all automatically opening doors. So he doesn't need, like, if someone else isn't around, he can still using technology that doesn't need him to use his hands, he can still get the doors to open, so he can go inside and outside his own home without somebody having to help him, which is just a huge, a huge lifestyle improvement. I think the most frustrating thing being in Nick's position is to have to rely on other people for so many parts of day-to-day life.
Absolutely. And anything, like I said, anything that you can do to capture a little bit of that for yourself has to be very liberating. So it looks like a fantastic documentary. Where can people find it? Because I know it's kind of going, kind of taking it around on a tour right now. How can people catch it?
It's just beginning. It's life on tour. And the way to check it out is just the film's website, AmericanVeteranMovie.com. We'll give information on screenings, which are happening right now, and when it becomes available digitally, which it will probably at the end of the year, then there's going to be links so that you can see it that way. But hopefully you'll be able to see it people will be able to see it near them. And as we have screening dates, we're going to be putting them up on the website, and we're psyched about it.
That's awesome. Super exciting. Julie Cohen, director of American Veteran at AmericanVeteranMovie.com. Really appreciate you taking time out today to talk to us about this.
Thanks so much. It was really fun.
Thank you. Thanks, have a great night.
Okay. Matthias Schultz writes about our smarter home discussion yesterday and the lifespan of connected bulbs. He says, smart home gadgets all require apps and firmware. Those apps and firmware are likely to be supported for a limited amount of time. No one should expect Philips to create Hue apps for the dominant OS 10 years from now. Sadly, no one should even expect Philips or other smart device manufacturers to support these devices even a few years from now. Unless the company has created a trust to pay for the long-term maintenance of the device and apps, I would not hold my breath that it will work years from now. If you buy a smart home device, you buy it because it's useful now, not because of its benefits 5 years down the road.
Mm-hmm. I understand that. I get it. But oh man, when you're buying these little things and they have longer, potentially they have longer lifespan than like a cell phone, like many people are used to replacing their cell phone every 2, 3, 4 years, whatever. So even when it's beyond the point of update, you know you're going to get a new one and cycle it out and everything. A lot of these things that I imagine you bring into your home, you're not thinking about, I'm going to buy this for the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. You're thinking long term. Mm-hmm. Not that means that they should, change their business model entirely and go bankrupt because they're supporting things for, 10 years down the line. But in light of all of the IoT insecurities that we keep hearing about, that's not a very positive message. It's not a very positive idea. That certainly isn't going to motivate people to upgrade everything in their homes, because 2 years from now you're going to have to upgrade everything again because they aren't supported anymore, and we already know about the insecurities that plague these devices.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the way that we operate now. Yeah. Oh well, I have this phone for a year and then I'll get a new one, right. And it's crazy, and it's not good for the environment, and yet we continue to do it.
Up next, a new look for the Statue of Liberty. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. So you're looking, but you can't find it. It's not under the couch. It's not in the cupboard. It's not on the table. Your meeting's in 20 minutes. You're panicking. You can't find your keys so you can get to your dang meeting. We've all had a scenario kind of like this, maybe identical to this. But now with Tracker, you'll never have to worry about losing things again, because that's what Tracker's all about, keeping you from losing your possessions. The Tracker Bravo is a coin-sized device constructed with anodized aluminum for the thinnest, most durable tracking. You can locate misplaced keys, wallets, bags, computers in seconds. You just pair tracker to your smartphone, attach it to any item, and you'll find its precise location with the tap of a button. If you lose your phone, you just press the button on the tracker device, or you can ask Amazon's Alexa, and your phone rings even when it's on silent. Your phone can track up to 10 devices at once. You can customize two-way separation alerts so you're notified before you leave your item behind. With over 4.5 million devices shipped, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world, so your lost item shows up on a map, even if it happens to be miles away. The Tracker app also records its last known location, so when another Tracker user comes within 100-foot range of your item, you will receive a GPS update of where item is located so you can go get it. And with a 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no reason not to give it a try. So stop losing your stuff today. Go to thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT. You'll get a free Tracker Bravo with any order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT for your free Tracker Bravo with any order. All right, TNT's fan of the day is Sergio Duarn, who sent us this collection, a few images on Twitter, saying, here is how I watch TNT on my Raspberry Pi 3 with Kodi under RetroPie. I hope you like it. And I know I like it. I'm assuming Brian RTD probably likes it because he's a big fan of the Raspberry Pi 3.
Yeah, it looks pretty slick. I like that.
Have you ever done the Kodi thing on Raspberry Pi?
I haven't done it. I'm going to give it a try now. I've been lazy because usually when I watch our stream, I just open up Chrome and go to that in the Pi. But I'm going to try this.
Kodi's kind of like a media management system for pulling in video sources and syncing up with your home library. And, you know, it has all the standard stuff too, like Netflix and whatever. So you can build that as a project with Raspberry Pi 3. And any Raspberry Pi, actually, I think you can put Kodi on. But show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself.
Or four pictures.
Or four pictures, or eight. Well, I think Twitter's gallery is probably limited to four. Whatever. Send us what you got. We'll take a look at it. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT, and we'll find it.
It is International Women's Day today, and to show her support, last night the Statue of Liberty went dark.
If only that were true.
It is not true. It was not a statement that someone was making about immigration either. It was just... The National Park Service says it was human error. The same reason Amazon Web Services broke the internet last week. Good old human error. That's chalk another one up for the robots. Yep. Crews were fixing a problem with the lights and somebody forgot to hit the reset button. It wasn't totally dark. There were still some lights, as you can see in that photo
torch.
Right there.
The torch was still lit
and her crown was lit. But yeah, human error.
Did you know that all the lights on the Statue of Liberty were switched out back in 2015 and turned into LEDs instead?
Oh, that's good.
They switched them with LEDs, which made me think, in light of International Women's Day, they should have switched those to red.
That's true.
And the Statue of Liberty would be wearing red today.
Yeah, or if they were Hue lights. That would be awesome. I think our tax dollars should really be paid for each one of those to be a Hue light. How much are they? Like $100 per light? 70? 40?
50, yeah, 40, 50, yeah. Depending on, you know, if you're getting the color ones, second or third generation, somewhere around there.
I think they should all be different colors because I think that Statue of Liberty should have a disco party.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Like a flashy disco party.
And like anytime anyone said it into their Amazon Echo or their Google Home, and then it would just... have a disco party in the Statue of Liberty. That's what I think our country should be working more.
That's too much power. I think that's a little too much power,
no,
but I would love to see it just once.
That's the kind of things we could do if we didn't, now that the robots have our jobs, we could come up with ideas like that and work on those projects instead of, you know, these jobs that robots could do better than us.
Yeah, you know, the important things in life.
Exactly.
TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, midnight UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter, @TechNewsTodayTV.
Do you know someone that needs to subscribe to our show?
Yes.
You probably do. Go to twit.tv/TNT. Find all the ways. Then get that person's device, their computer, their Apple TV, or their Android phone, or their iPhone, their laptop.
Their Kodi.
Yeah, their Kodi. Get it and then subscribe for them because you know what they need and, you know, give it to them as a gift. And another great gift is coming here. Another great gift that is also free. Email tickets at twit.tv. Bring that friend here. Maybe they need to see us in person first to tell whether they want to subscribe or not. And if you want to tweet at me about what kind of lights you think the Statue of Liberty should have, I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Brian. Thanks to Patrick and the raccoon, Rocky Raccoon, right?
Freddy.
Okay. See, I'm going to keep going back to Rocky because it's so much fun. Thanks to Kevin for editing the show. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Sorry, Freddy.